for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's episode 324 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This week is a special doubleheader episode with two interviews with great creators. First up, it's the return of Jonathan Lewis, who has a Kickstarter going on for Violet, his latest comic book. Of course, it has a strong female character, which I always love. And he's got a deadline coming up for this book on April 15th, so I'm sure you're going to want to get out and support it. We talk about the character and the fact that he's editing this time instead of writing. He's got good things to say about this book and, of course, comics in general, so be sure to listen. Then everything wraps up with Jason Youngbluth, the creator of a fascinating series called Weapon Brown. You might recognize some of the characters. He has a unique take on them, which makes for a really strong read. And, of course, it's also got lots of humor as well as action. So it's a terrific book. It's just completed a successful Kickstarter. And there's things coming from Weapon Brown in the future that you should know about. He's got a lot of great things to say, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy listening. There's a lot to get to in this episode. So let's get to it.
You would think that life would be easy with the ability to fly and super strength. My name is Violet, and I spend my nights fighting crime. But I had no idea the crime would start fighting back. What Dane became? Rampage. I don't know if I can stop him alone. Join me for my story.
It's always great to talk with Jonathan Lewis, the prolific creator of comics such as Penumbra and a new one with Violet. Why don't you go ahead and name the books you've done, Jonathan? I imagine I'm behind on the ones that you're doing.
You might actually be better at that than I am, Wayne. I wrote on Penumbra, both issue one and issue two, and then I wrote on Blue Shift, which we just finished up.
Right, right.
And then I'm actually editor on this book, Violet, that is coming out.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. Now, why don't you go ahead and jump in and talk about Violet? Is it Violet or Violet? Because, you know, sometimes we call it Violet when it's a flower.
Mm-hmm. I believe it's Violet.
Okay. So it's like the flower.
Yep. I specifically say it wrong. I say it Violet just because I know it sounds just a little too close to violent for just the way I pronounce things.
Right, right. That's what I was thinking. I thought violent is very close to that. So talk about where the concept for this book came from.
This actually came out of Penumbra. We had gotten done with Penumbra, and I'd voiced my frustrations with Ed that, you know, she's a really fun character to write, you know, very strong. And my problem with her was who she is at the very beginning is who she's is at the very end. It's like writing James Bond or Indiana Jones. You know, who Indiana Jones is when he's running from the ball and who he is at the end of any of his movies is pretty much the same person, with a few exceptions. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure that we had a character that wasn't true, that she changed throughout the story. Now, on Blue Shift, that, of course, happened. Mm-hmm. This story was written before Blue Shift. This story was written by Jennifer and Ed, and then I was the editor and then went through and did some dialogue stuff as well. And then, of course, I'm always the letterer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is cool. Now, there's a Kickstarter going for this, right? What's the situation with the Kickstarter?
Kickstarter is fully funded.
All right.
It was fully funded in the first 2 hours, actually.
Wow. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah, our fastest yet, which I had to poke fun at Blue Shift about because the one with flight outran the one with speed.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. So, given that, now you're probably into the extra levels. What extra levels are coming? Now, we're recording this a little ahead of time, so but by the time this hits, it's probably going to be, you know, you're probably going to be several levels in. But what are the extra levels that you have planned for Violet?
We've already unlocked the first one, which is an extra wallpaper for everybody. It was one of the big requested things that we have in Blue Shift was a nice wallpaper everybody could use. And we're just a few dollars shy of unlocking the postcards, which hopefully that'll be done by the time the podcast comes out, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that at conventions, people will just like walk away with handfuls of the things. They're like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. They were free. We were giving them out to you anyway. Mm-hmm. So we made sure we wanted to make one for Violet. Since she was made after Lacuna, after Penumbra, after all the other characters that we'd already made, we wanted to have one that was just her. Mm-hmm. And it unlocks here in a few more dollars. And then after that, we start unlocking the extra pages.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great, really good. So, wow, you're getting good at this, obviously, with the Kickstarter now, because 2 hours and you're done already. Now, well, if I remember correctly, you had a low goal that you met almost immediately. Was that what happened with this one?
Yep, $200. Typically, our stuff is all but finished whenever we bring it to Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
I never want to make the mistake of not having the art and script and everything done before the Kickstarter started.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant, hey, it was almost all paid for. We were just a little bit shy.
Mm-hmm.
So $200, finished the funding.
So now everything is gravy. I mean, you know you're going to get your $200. But the more you can raise, when does this end, by the way?
This ends in, well, 10 days from now, but Sunday, April 15th at 6 p.m. Central Time.
Okay, so not terribly far away. So that's a good thing. In fact, this may air on that very last day. What time does it end on the 15th?
Let's see, 7 p.m. your time.
Okay, so we've got a little time. So if you haven't been supporting Violet and you want to get out there, please be sure to get the Kickstarter, no matter when you hear this, because it deserves your support. And you'll get great bonus things out of it when you do go in and support it. So go to Kickstarter, and why don't you spell Violet so people know they can find the right thing?
Oh, I actually got a cheat for that because I knew that would be a problem.
Okay.
If you go to bit.ly, you know, bit.ly / Wayne's Comics, that's a special link just for you, anybody that listens to the Wayne's Comic Podcast, to take you directly to our Kickstarter.
Mm.
We'll know it's you, but it doesn't give us names. If you send us a message that says, hey, I listen to Wayne's Comics Podcast, and it told me to come here, we have something extra special secret just for you.
Okay, great. Wow, so be sure to do that and get that good thing done, because I'm sure that good comics always deserve great support, and even though the goal has been met, there's still good money that can help make this book a reality, so please be sure to do that. So let's see, who's the artist on this one?
Artist on this one is... I have a terrible time pronouncing his name. He's going to kill me. Ramat Winsboroto.
Okay.
Right, Winsboroto. I have a link to his page on the Kickstarter if you go to it.
Okay, because it's better than I could do. One of the things I really liked was the use of faces. I think he did, like, Violet's face is usually really expressive, and I like the parents' faces who are in there, and I liked it real well. Now, you were telling me a little bit, and I don't know how much you want to go into this, but you're editing this one. This one's actually written. You brought in a lady to help you with the, I guess who wrote it, maybe we should say, and you've been editing that, and, you know, one of the things that I know you're good at and that you do a lot is provide strong women characters. Talk to me about this process. I mean, why, instead of you doing the writing on this, did this lady do it? Did she propose the concept? How did it happen?
Well, Ed was the creator of Violet, and Rampage is the villain that shows up right at the end of the part that you've read.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we'd gotten to the end of Penumbra and Penumbra 2, and we were like, okay, you know, what could we do better? What could we do different? And I said, I want a character that changes, and also I want someone that actually knows how to write women. I do my best, but I'm not a woman. And Jennifer Martin has been working with us for a long time, doing short stories and then working on our bigger books as well, and you know, she volunteered for it. She was really excited about it when we started explaining it to her. And so she went through and started writing it. And then, of course, as always, Ed's never too far from any project that has his name on it. He hopped in and started doing the setting and the scenery and the universe, the world building stuff that really makes all our universes pop is all from Ed. That's his specialty.
Mm-hmm. Now, before you go any farther, why don't you identify who Ed is, just in case somebody doesn't know?
Ed Jowett is the owner, CEO. Oh, what's all the different titles he has? Project leader, creator of Era of the Consortium, Era of the Empowered, a whole slew of things that we do, has his hands on it at every point. I don't think there's a comic I've put out that doesn't have some kind of credit for Ed, either as a co-writer or co-creator or something. On this particular one, he actually gets a billing above Jennifer. Because of the massive amount of stuff, massive amount of work he put into this book to make it happen.
Wow, which is great. Now, you largely the company that you work for does a lot of video games and stuff like that too, right? Is this one tied into the video games as well, or is this different?
Tabletop role-playing games, just like D&D.
Okay. So is this part of, does it have a game associated with it, or is it just a comic?
Yes. Era of the Empowered. I think our campaign for it just finished up. You can also buy the game itself off of our website, shadesofvengeance.com. And it's a universe where you could build your character however you wanted to make them. And you could be a superhero in a world that's not quite Earth. It's called Terra. We wanted a world that was, you could have cell phones in it, but also still have like rotary landlines. I think you saw on like page 7 or 8 that she has like an old dial phone and then scoops up her smartphone and slips it in her pocket and walks out.
Now, Violet, and I like the spelling, is V-I-O-L-E-T-T-E. Her real life name is Viola, right? Or Viola, how do you pronounce that?
I pronounce it Viola. Oh, one T on Violet.
Oh, one T on Violet? Okay. All right. So we got that right.
I probably misspelled it at some point when I was sending it to you.
Could be. That's all right. So, and of course, we want to talk about her costume because her name is Violet. It's also, she's got a purple costume, which I like. Who designed that? Was that Ed? Who made that come together?
Ed did the general concept of it. And then, he's going to kill me. Ramit was the one that really brought it to life. We had another artist take a crack at it at one point. That page 10 I sent you was the original artist.
Okay, now, what city does this take place in, just so I'm clear on that?
If it was Earth, this would be London.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, they do talk about London at a time or two. So the family's in London, and I noticed that this is a kind of a timely story because they talk a little bit about the family and Chechnya and things like that. Do you want to identify a little bit about that? Well, how come Chechnya is involved with it?
Well, it was – I got to be careful how deep I go into this. Because the script's changed just a little bit so that it's not quite Earth. You know, we wanted to do something that was a little more, not as ham-fisted as it could be, you know? Because with Penumbra, it's all ham all the time. We wanted something that was more, like you said, timely, but also a little bit timeless. So 10 years from now, if we're still discussing immigration, and we will be, because we've been discussing it for the last 9 centuries, if not more. I mean, heck, go back to any major war. When we were fighting with sticks, it was, hey, I don't want you in my camp. And it's always the question of the people that came for help, how long can they stay? When they become contributing members of society, do you say, well, yeah, but you're only supposed to be here so many years? When they have a daughter that's born there and she's a citizen and she's supposed to be there and that's never going to be taken away from her, is it okay to take away her parents? The real idea that was around Violet herself was, this is somebody that could punch someone through a brick wall, fly faster than a bullet train, but you can't punch an immigration officer and expect anything good to come from it. Power doesn't change anything when it comes to the law.
Very good. Because so what you're saying is that Violet herself is a citizen in the UK, but her parents are not.
Right. Well, and I know it says UK and Chechnya in the copy that I sent you. The actual comic itself, we're going to tweak the names just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily Earth. It's more a Terra. There's slightly mm-hmm. differences. Okay. Now, there's an interesting adversary for her in this book. And the character's name is Dane. Do you want to describe Dane a little bit?
On the first page, she does the famous, I have super strength, so I'm going to lift up the back of your car to keep you from driving off. Mm-hmm. And there's these two guys breaking out of Julia's jewelry, mm-hmm. which I thought was amusing as heck. Mm-hmm. I know, probably just me. But you can see, like, she rips the bumper off the car after flipping it on its hood and locks the guys around a light post. And one of the guys is yelling up at her. That's him, actually. Mm-hmm. He's that running gag in comics of the guy that you catch every other week, and then a week later he's out, and then you catch him again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, one of the big things of the story is that he, let's just say, he wants revenge, and so for that, and something interesting happens to him as a result. And you probably don't want to get into it too much, but if you see the cover, you get a fair idea as to what's going on with him.
Yep. The Kickstarter page actually gives it away. He mm-hmm. becomes Rampage, mm-hmm. this just massive lizard man. He has the ability to blend in with his background, so he's all but invisible to Violet. So all her usual powers, speed, he's quicker. Flight, he can climb up a wall and jump and grab her. Mm-hmm. Any of the neat stuff that she can do, he has been built specifically to counter and surpass her in every spot.
Hmm. Now, what are her powers, by the way? We should get that.
I could go through the whole list, but I'm going to cheat. Hmm. She actually has visceral telekinetic powers. It boosts her abilities with kind of a telekinesis, so she doesn't actually fly. She's pushing herself off the ground with telekinesis. She doesn't actually have super strength. She's boosting her movements to look like she does.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's cool. So will we find out how she got her powers and how she got to what is England in that universe?
It's actually supposed to be our universe. What happens is, far in our future, many colony ships go out. Mm-hmm. It ties the era universes together. Like, we have Era of the Consortium and Era of the Empowered and mm-hmm. Era Survival. All these different things, they all start with Era for a reason. Mm-hmm. They all came from Earth, and they all went their separate ways. And then each colony ship became its own thing. Mm-hmm. Some focused on the science, some focused on more the technology, some focused actually on chemistry, mm-hmm. and it all but destroyed their world. That's the Era of the Era Survival. Mm-hmm. This world completely lost everything, no memories, no nothing. And so when they tried to rebuild society, they basically rebuilt roughly the 80s, 90s of our world. And they've basically forgotten that they're not on Earth anymore. So a lot of stuff repeats.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, how many pages are in Violet? You gave me, and I was grateful to read the first 10. In the first issue, how many is going to be in it?
I think we're going to 11 or 12, depending on stretch goals, of course. Mm-hmm. We hit our stretch goals, comic gets bigger, or double length, you know, all the way up to the, you know, usual industry standard of 21, 22 pages. And if it goes beyond that, then 2 issues, then 3 issues.
Great. Because Penumbra, you have 2 so far, right?
Right. Penumbra has actually been our bestseller. She's just so fun to read and write and work on that she got 2 issues before anybody else.
Okay, very good. So, got Violet. You've got to have some plans to team these guys all up at some point. If you're, you know, it's got to be like an assembling of heroes, like a league of sort. Have you got that in the works as well?
Yes. Actually has to do with good old Viola herself. As Viola, she is a mythology student at university. Mm-hmm. And she is going to run into some old gods and some people from Atlantis. And it's going to knock her a bit for a loop. And of course, I have to have her meet Blue Shift because their costume colors clash. And I got to see what our artist comes up with as a response. I've already written a couple jokes of, okay, one of us has got to change colors.
Very good, very good. Because any idea what you're going to call the group? We probably don't want to say that because that might somebody else might try to rip that off.
Not yet. Ed already has a name picked out. If you buy the Era of the Empowered book, it has it in it.
Okay. All right. Well, then I guess we have to do that in order to find these good things out, which is great. So, all right. You've got a lot of good character things going on in here as well as superheroics. I think this is another great book for you guys. I really like the – I think the art and the coloring looks good. Of course, I like a purple costume. You never see purple costumes anymore, so I really like that. So, man, I hope this continues to be a big success. I'm glad that you've met your goal. I hope you get a lot of good money coming in because I really want this one to fly and do real well because I particularly like the character. I like the humanity of her. And of course, I also like it when somebody is challenged. And Rampage looks to be somebody who's going to challenge her pretty well. So I like that very well as well.
You know, it was something I really loved about this comic is the problem she faces is you can't just punch every problem or just fly away from it. Mm-hmm. Problems stick with you. Problems stay. And you got to find your own answers.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. So let's see. When does the Kickstarter end?
It ends April 15th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard.
That's Sunday, of course.
Or Eastern Daylight.
Yes. Sorry. People who do taxes and stuff are going to have another day. So you don't have to worry about doing taxes on Sunday. You can do them on Monday if you need to. But I would be sure to get out there and support this book. And make sure that this book happens because it's a great book. Lots of great characters. I love strong female characters, as everybody who listens to this podcast knows. And I am looking forward to this. I hope you get to do a lot of issues. Do you have any kind of an arc in mind as far as with Violet, as far as that goes?
Yes. I'm going to have several of the characters meet, and then they hear about Violet and Blue Shift and try to recruit them into this looming threat that's starting to come.
Very good. Very good. Should be fun. Are there going to be games associated with this group as we go forward?
Oh, of course. Couldn't not have them. I'm sure there'll be a Kickstarter or something from Ed to feature it. But also the comics themselves, of course, will always be on Kickstarter and then later on Comixology or off our website.
Okay, and I wanted to mention, too, that some of your books are out on Comixology, too. You mentioned Lucida, and I think that Penumbra is out there as well. So I think that if you want to get a hold of the books, you can get them digitally, you can go out and get them there. How do people get the books if they don't want to go through Comixology?
If they don't want to go through Comixology, you can go to Stalling for Loading Time, shadesofvengeance.com/store.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. How much does the issues cost normally?
Hopping down to the bottom here. Physical or digital?
Well, physical.
Physical, some of our books are as low as like $2, $3, and then our bigger ones, of course, go all the way up to $6.
Okay, so that's good. And you can order them and you'll send them. Now, I've got to ask you, I don't think I've seen you at conventions yet. Are you going to be doing conventions anytime soon?
Yes, we are doing MCM London Comic Con here at the end of May. Again, if you walk up to me and say, hey, I heard you on Wayne's Comics podcast, I got something special waiting for you.
Great, great. Well, I hope so. A lot of people do that. I can never guarantee. We get a goodly number of listeners, but it's kind of hard to track them sometimes. But, man, I hope they'll continue to support your stuff. You make great things. I think Violet is everyone gets a little better than the previous. You build on the last one. I think Violet may be your best so far. So I highly encourage people, get to Kickstarter or follow the link that he's talking about and get to the supporting of this book because I think you're going to really enjoy it. Jonathan, you guys keep up the wonderful stuff because it's terrific.
Oh, yes. Can't wait to show you my next one. I'm finally putting that one into production that you and I have talked about every podcast I've been on with you.
All right. We won't do that again since we've already done it, but I'm really looking forward to this. Every time you make something, I get more and more impressed, so I just want to let you know, keep up the wonderful stuff.
Oh, thanks, Wayne. And thanks for having me on. such a dream to get to be on your podcast. I never miss listening to an episode. Just listen to that last one. What's his name? Jeff?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Actually, I had to go send him a note on Kickstarter and back him because I really love that conversation you had with him.
Well, thank you so much. And it's always good to talk with you. So we'll do this again.
Thanks, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome to the podcast Jason Youngbluth, the creator of a really interesting book called Weapon Brown, which at first sounding, it may not be what you expect. How are you doing today, Jason?
I am doing just fine.
Okay, now Weapon Brown, we're recording this a little early, but my understanding is that your Kickstarter is doing real well for this book. Can you update us as to where we are when we're recording?
Oh, yes. Actually, the Kickstarter has concluded, and it was a success. And it looks like the Weapon Brown graphic novel to which you were referring will be reprinted, which is the initial goal of the Kickstarter. And in addition, I will be publishing a new 48-page epilogue to that graphic novel, which will be called Weapon Brown Aftershock. And that was also one of the rewards for the Kickstarter. So there's a big rally at the end. My people came through, and now the world will be subjected to Weapon Brown once again.
And you can relax to some degree.
Oh my God! Oh no! The anxiety has just begun.
Okay, because I always hear people refer to Kickstarters as the daily heart attack.
Yeah. Well, I was pretty chill because. Up until a few days before the end, I thought, you know what, it doesn't look like it's going to clear. And I was planning my next move. And then suddenly on the last day, it really started to – I raised like a couple thousand on the last day. Ooh. And, did a little last-minute incentive thing for signatures. And I was pleasantly surprised and more than thrilled that the people had come through. Because I've run a couple Kickstarters before, and they funded successfully too. And this time around, I was like, "Well, you can't win them all. So if it doesn't happen, I can roll with that." But no one could be happier that it did work out.
Well, that's great because I know so many people who expect their Kickstarters to go through, and then at the last second, suddenly it doesn't happen, and they're surprised. And my feeling always is that this is a thing that you've got to work almost every day at to make it a success.
Yeah. Yeah, and I did that. I did as much promotion and advertising and, begging from my friends, not for money so much as for, you know, helping spread the word on social media and such. And, you don't want to slack off. I was actually trying to raise like almost $20,000, and that is the highest amount I've ever tried to raise at once. As it was going on, it's like, oh my God, I'm trying to raise $20,000. I wasn't even trying to raise that. I've raised more than that, but I never tried to raise that much. But that was just what it cost to print up as many units of this very large book and to also cover shipping and other rewards. So I was like, well, this is a roll of the dice. But again, all's well that ends well.
That's right. Now, how many copies does this cost? I mean, if you've gotten that much money, how many copies of the trade or the hardcover are you making? Is it a trade or a hardcover? Let's start with that.
The initial printing of it, the first printing, was both softcover and hardcover. There was a limited edition hardcover, and then the rest was softcovers. And this was just, I was raising money for the softcover edition. And I can only afford to print two because they're going to be printed on solid gold. That was one of my incentives, is would you like a comic book that weighs 800 pounds and is printed on pure gold? So, yeah, that's going to be an exciting, you know, the good part is there's not a lot of shipping involved.
Solid gold. I don't think I've ever heard solid that gold, before.
Yeah.
What made you?
No. I kid because I'm a humorist.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I had you going.
Because I have to say, it reminds me very much of the Jonathan Winters joke when he was Maude Fregerton. He had greeting cards that sold for $1 million each. And his response was always, all I need is one customer, just one. And I was thinking, you got two.
We
were doing better.
We lost the treasure there.
You were doing better than she was because you had two. So I thought
he had the well-crafted joke around his. But I will probably print up at least 2,000 units and possibly more. I don't want to have to do this a third time. And the reason I had to reprint this was because even though my first Kickstarter for Weapon Brow was a big success, I only had 3,000 units total. Mm. And I thought I was going to be able to hang on to those for a while, but suddenly there was a huge influx of interest in Weapon Brow as of last year, and I sold out of the rest, and people still wanted it, so had to get more.
Yeah, well, that's a good sign. If you're doing all the, if you're making that kind of progress.
Yeah, well, it was a surprise to me, too. I just... I got some coverage from Just the Right Guy online, and suddenly my email was blowing up. I don't know, does email blow up or just phones? I don't know what they're saying these days.
Well, this is weaponized, so we'd have to go with blown up.
Blown up, absolutely.
Mm-hmm, that's what we'd have to do. So, okay, we got to get into some of this stuff, and I'm a little hesitant on some of the stuff to get into, but we'll see how we do. We'll cover as much as we want to. I got to read the inside. It says the funny pages have been weaponized. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple paragraphs, and I'll do the real quick and as efficient as I can. Chuck is a hard-bitten, hard-hitting ex-super soldier scratching out a living amongst the ruins of a crapsack future. Friendless except for his faithful mutt, Snoop, Chuck has one mission, stay alive and one step ahead of his creators, the Tyrannical Syndicate. If you don't know what it is by now, I don't know if we're ever going to be able to get that. But when Chuck stumbles upon a gruesome secret that could save humanity from extinction, he must decide if he can abandon his bitter rage long enough to help a group of outgunned heroes who still believe in hope. The Syndicate has its own plans for the secret, however. To claim it, they will risk a second Armageddon when they unleash their ultimate weapon, an nth-level killer with a hair trigger and a stuffed tiger. Whatever that could be. And at the end it says, a brutal parody that pulls no punches. Weapon Brown delivers black eyes in the most famous faces in cartoon history. And, you know, I have to say, and I read it, I was kind of entertained as to all this stuff. Because I know these characters pretty well. And so when I saw your versions of them, I kind of had to laugh. I was like, oh my goodness, this is really kind of interesting how you did this.
I hope you did laugh. That was the point.
I was reading, there's a great little introduction that you have in the beginning, a preface, where you talk about where these things came from. And of course, I don't want you to go into all that depth, but why don't you tell people what Weapon Brown is about briefly so they get an idea of what we're talking about.
Well, I tried to be coy in my product description, which you just read. But the long and short of it is, it's a Mad Max style post-apocalyptic action story where all the characters and all the context is lifted from famous newspaper comic strips. So it's at once, it's a straight up dry action comic with a story of its own to tell. But then the humor, the parody comes in when you realize that every character you're encountering in the book is some famous comic strip character that you will be familiar with. So Weapon Brown, I'm not giving away any secrets when I tell you that it's Charlie Brown. Mm-hmm. And then he encounters basically any comic strip character you can name, some of them minor characters, some of them significant players, and it all leads up to a battle royale with Calvin and Hobbes.
I got a big kick out of that, I have to say, because I love Calvin and Hobbes. That's probably my favorite strip of all time. And to see him on the opposite number with a weaponized Charlie Brown was kind of a, yeah. I had to say, I got a big kick out of that.
The original concept for Weapon Brown was a short story that I wrote that was just Charlie Brown versus the Peanuts Gang. After I'd exhausted all those jokes and people wanted more, I thought, well, the only logical step is to pit him against other comic strip characters, and so who would be his ultimate rival? It would have to be Calvin. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things in the preface that you said that I was really intrigued by was that you are and yet you aren't a Peanuts fan, mm-hmm. which I got a kick out of. You are in the sense that you love the animated shows, but you were never much for the strip. Do you want to?
Yeah.
Because not many people come down. They either love it or they don't. I'm kind of interested because mm-hmm. I don't know many people who come down like you do. Talk about what that means. I mean, how you come down, why you see one differently from the other.
Well, I mean, I guess it's all in ways deliberate. It's wonderful that both the animated specials and the strip were both written by Charles Schulz. So it says something that I'm so fond of the animated specials. I do like Charlie Brown. I was just never a big fan of the strip. By the time I was really enjoying comic strips, for some reason, Peanuts wasn't the strip itself wasn't necessarily floating my boat. I was a bigger fan of Garfield, of Funky Winkerbean, then Bloom County when it came along, Doonesbury. But I have nothing but warm fuzzies for those animated specials. They were basically the heralds of Christmas time, Halloween time, even Easter time, and they're just so sweet. The animation and the children's voice acting is it just works so correctly, and so I was always greatly fond of them. Mm-hmm. So that's what I meant in the preface, is that my avenue into Peanuts admiration was more through the cartoons than it was through the comic strips. But over time, as I've read, more so as an adult, I've really come to appreciate the Peanuts comic strip as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, your first chapter, the first section, is called A Peanut Scorned.
Yeah.
And you focus a lot on the Peanuts characters, and there's all kinds of stuff. The very first time we actually see the Charlie Brown or Weapon Brown in the front, he refers to himself as, "I'm just a round-headed kid." And he's got that one little curly hair in the front, and he's wearing a shirt, of course, that we would all recognize. Mm-hmm. And so I got a huge kick out of it. And then, of course, my second favorite character was Scoop. Or no, did I get it right? Snoop.
Snoop, yeah.
Yeah, I got to get that one right, because I got a huge kick out of Snoop, because, Snoopy was always this smarter than anybody else in the whole strip kind of dog, and yet this one isn't quite that way, I wouldn't say. He's not quite that same kind of dog. How close did you try to follow the strip or the animated series when you did this? I mean, was this kind of your warped interpretation or your point of view as to how these characters maybe should have been?
Well, the nub of the premise is, take everything that is most famous about Peanuts and give it, like you said, give it a little twist. Mm-hmm. And don't twist it too much, because it's humorous, but it's not really played for laughs. I want the laughs to come from the absurdity of the premise. But you should be laughing like at how outrageous it is, rather than how knee slapping it is. But yeah, basically there's all these well known tropes about Peanuts that we all know. He can never kick the football.
Right.
Sees a crazy psychiatrist, or sees a psychiatrist, or plays one. Patty and Marcy, what's their relationship? Why is Franklin the only black kid in the strip? et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, I will make a single joke or two at the most about every element of Peanuts that we're most familiar with, and just knit it together in a story that if you didn't know Peanuts, would still make perfect sense as an action comic. But once you realize it's Peanuts, it's like, oh, he's ribbing this, he's ribbing that. And a lot of people really like Snoop, too. That's a lot of people's favorite character. And I didn't want to do Snoopy as an actual thinking, acting human. But I do make some reference to the idea that he might be genetically altered. Mm-hmm. And so maybe he's a little smarter than the average bear. But mostly he's just a killing machine.
Mm-hmm. There's some lines in here that just make me laugh out loud. Like, no more failure face is one of the lines.
That was the line that I came up with when I first conceived of Weapon Brown. It wasn't even called Weapon Brown. It was when I was in high school, and I drew a single-page cartoon about it, just Charlie Brown as a Mad Max character, mm-hmm. and that was the punchline. It was, something like, Charlie Brown 2025, no more failure face, and that sort of stuck in my head forever, and I was like, well, I got to someday build an entire comic around that.
Well, then, of course, that happens right at a very... I don't know what a satisfying moment, maybe I should call it. He says that right when, because Lucy and the football and stuff gets all involved. And this Charlie Brown's resolution to that is much more satisfying than the ones in the strip.
Yeah. And that's really the pivot point of the locus of the entire story is getting to that moment where Chuck gets his revenge against Lucy. Cause that's sort of the ultimate joke about Peanuts is, the ultimate unresolved matter that you sort of wish Charles Schulz might've done before he died is just do one strip where he actually kicks the football and Lucy is left crying over it or something. But I mean, in a way it's better that he didn't, but that doesn't mean I can't. So I'm taking what was laid down for us, and I'm fulfilling the mandate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also love there's another place where you have a whole page devoted to probably Charlie Brown's one of his most famous sayings, where he's there, he's everything's shattered around him, and he goes, "Ugh!" And a great big. I had to laugh when I read that too, because boy, that is so. And I won't say what's going on when that happens, but let's just say it's something. It's kind of the opposite of what we were just talking about. Something happens that he probably didn't really want to have happen. So
yeah,
pretty good stuff.
But well, anyway. it's a tearjerker as much as it is a thriller.
Yeah. I guess I've got to ask. I know you've probably been asked this 1,000 times, but why go this route with these characters? I haven't read anything like this before, and right there it may be the answer to the question. But what other things were you trying to accomplish by doing this?
I think it speaks for itself. With a lot of my stuff, it's basically an effort to come up with the right balance between absurdity and poignancy. And a lot of my strips have reached for that. And I think Weapon Brown ended up being the one where I was able to sort of walk that razor's edge for longer than any other cartoon I've ever created. It just seemed to write itself. So it was there was the homage to Peanuts. There was the homage to post-apocalyptic 80s cinema. There was I was a big fan also of one particular story by Harlan Ellison called A Boy and His Dog, which became a movie. Mm-hmm. The idea is like, well, Charlie Brown and Snoopy are the ultimate A Boy and His Dog, so let's just, put that in there too. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed to need to be done. So I guess it's not so much what I wanted to get out of it, it's more like, how dare I even resist it?
Mm-hmm. Well, as you've mentioned in the preface too, there are other characters in there. And of course, I think the Popeye one's my favorite of the whole other group, because they just, okay. He says, because I always liked Popeye. He was an outrageous character to me anyway, and already he's that way. And yet you take him even farther out there, I thought, than I'd ever seen him done before. And I've seen some crazy versions of him, but this one really stands out to me. It's one of those unbelievable kind of things that you just can't help but sit and laugh at. It was just great.
Well, Popeye is one of those useful characters where he actually looks like a kind of mutant. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense to do him as a nuclear mutant. And I did that with a lot of characters. I just said, well, some of these characters are too silly looking to really mesh with the human looking characters. But when you assume that they've all been mutated by, you know, radiation and gene bombs and stuff like that, then it all explains itself. Mm-hmm. And if you like Pops, good news, you'll be seeing plenty of them in Weapon Brown Aftershock.
Oh, great. Now, there's a couple of things you do in the formatting of things that I got a kick out of, too. But you have, like, in the beginning of chapters or parts, you have a newspaper cover or front page. And I got a kick out of that because what are you referring to? But stuff inside the paper. And so you start off with something that looks like the front page of a newspaper.
You know, it's funny. I'm not even sure I realized that I was making a kind of commentary on newspaper strips by using newspapers in that way. I mean, it's funny you should mention that, because now that you do, it's like, oh, yeah. But I'm not sure that even occurred to me. I love the – so what you're describing are the pages that create the chapter breaks in my story. And what I wanted to do is tell a story about the unfolding of the nuclear war that destroys the planet, and how they elect a new president, and he has trouble relating with Ming the Merciless, who is not a space emperor but is like meant to be like another ruler of a country on Earth. And so chapter by chapter, I show different newspapers which show the war going worse and worse. And I always kind of love those kind of reveals in movies and comics, where you sort of get scraps of the past, and it's the classic trope where, you know, someone's wandering through the desert, they come across a bit of a newspaper, and it just says war on the front of the newspaper. Now, it's funny, is very, very recently, USA Today published that cover. They published a newspaper that said something like, you know, something, something increases fears of World War III with North Korea. I'm like, Jesus Christ, did they just announce World War III like they do in the movies? that paper has been printed. So everyone start canning your peaches and digging those fallout shelters. The other thing, too, is that I've been noticing, I don't know if you noticed this, but I think the newspapers stories that I created for Weapon Brown seem to be very similar to the kind of stories that are unfolding under the current president.
So. Yeah, I've seen a lot of that these days.
Yeah.
Now, some I haven't mentioned, but I think really we got to delve into is the fact that you not only wrote this, but you also did the artwork for it, right?
Oh, kill me. It took so long. It was only supposed to be two issues, and then just kept growing and growing.
Wow. Because, you know, not everybody can do that, and do the artwork as with the same kind of feeling that the text has. And yet yours is very much, they two really work well together, I thought. And, you know, you do a good job of making things happen visually as well as verbally. And not everybody can do that. So I thought that was a real accomplishment on your part.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. It's, I've been a cartoonist my entire life, but I've always wanted to write the stories too. So I guess it's fortunate that I'm skilled enough that I can create a story that, I mean, a lot of people are like that. They have one skill or the other, and when they try to veer into the other lane, it doesn't come out as well.
No.
I think it's more out of necessity. I don't have enough money to hire someone else to do the other chore, so I got to do them both.
Now, I'd say the cover is a duotone. It's yellow with black, which is interesting. Then when you go the most colorful part of the page is the second page, the inside cover. That's got more color in it than anywhere else that I could see in the book, which is an interesting choice. Uh-huh. You know, unless I missed something at the end. Oh, yeah, you've got more color at the end of the book. But, you know, as far as when you're getting into the book, you don't expect the full color page to be the inside cover.
I'm actually not sure what you're talking about, because the guts of the book are black and white.
So yeah.
I don't know
but the page that
the cover, yeah. The page the cover that, and the back cover.
Well, the page that I read from, the Hardbitten and all that stuff, Popeye has some red and blue, and then there's red in different places.
Yes. That's the back cover, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I got, because I'm not used to the inside cover being... Was that the back of the book? Is that what that was?
Yeah, that's the back of it.
Oh, because in the version I got to see, it was.
I'd like to have done that. That sounds cool.
So I was sitting there going, like, wow, I'd never seen a book have full color inside front cover do that. So, okay, well, that's.
Well, that's the way you remember it. Then I say you should remember it the way you want.
Okay. Now, of course, I must ask, obviously the black and white is easier to do. But as opposed to a full-color book, I mean, of course, the time is a lot less, too. Did you feel that the black and white fit the tone of what you were doing more than, say, a full-color would have?
You know, I think it worked just fine. It's kind of the thing where since I knew I didn't have time to do it in color, I just sort of put that out of my head entirely and just focused on making the black and white artwork as interesting as possible. But, yeah, you know, as you pointed out, I mean, I'm the responsible for every step from the first sketch to the getting it to the printer and then, you know, receiving the boxes. So, you know, I gotta take my shortcuts where I can, as long as it doesn't subtract from the quality. I've recently started putting out some of my books in color, and the Weapon Brown Aftershock book is going to be done with spot color that sort of resembles the treatment that I gave the front cover and the back cover, where the majority of the artwork will be black and white, but I'll include doses of red and then yellow for Chuck's shirt. I'll be doing that, with not as a full color thing, but more like, you know, with creative license. A bit like what Frank Miller did with some of his Sin City work, where he would use some color for some costumes, but not color it entirely. So that's going to be the first Weapon Brown product that actually has color on the inside, too. So I'm looking forward to that.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, I do want to point out, though, that if you are a fan of Peanuts and you think that a young child might want to read this book because it's based on that, I would say reconsider that. This isn't.
I would say it's good for kids of all ages from 8 to 80. You just go pick one up at your local comic shop or drugstore and have yourself a blast.
Sounds like Jimmy Stewart.
Sorry. You know, I can't afford to lose even one sale because some parent was responsible. So.
Okay, well, then anybody can go out and buy this book, then. Let's go with that.
You got a kids these days, they'll be surprised at how tame it is.
No, I got a huge kick, though, on the last page of the story. The headline in there really made me laugh. It's they're talking about the way things are resolving, and I can't say that sentence because it's going to spoil some stuff. But let's just say that there's a wonderful saying that made me laugh out loud when I got to read that last headline. So I have to say, I thought you did a wonderful job.
That's the newspaper headline, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
That was a killer. I thought that one made me laugh right out loud at the very end. But then you do something else that just made me – I just enjoyed the heck out of it. You went and did your versions of several of the holiday specials that you liked so much. And I thought those were hysterical, too. I thought they just made me laugh right out loud so many times because they just great. Now, see, all this leads me to think, though, these were animated specials when they started. Is there any chance that, say, like Adult Swim or somebody else like that might take an interest in making these into animated specials by any chance?
Let me tell you something. Let me tell the world, because this is going out to the world. I have done my best to make sure that this is the most Adult Swim-worthy comic that has ever not been turned into a cartoon yet. So any moment, you know, I don't care who you are. You can Seth Green, Seth MacFarlane, whoever's in charge of Rick and Morty, just knock on my door. I'll sell this thing for a nickel. I'm cheap and I'm naive. But I would not turn up my nose at an offer like that. But so far, nothing has happened yet. What I would like, I'm a huge fan of the movie Heavy Metal, based off of the magazine, and I love the adult oriented animations from that era. You know, Ralph Bakshi's work. There was one a little more juvenile, but still in that vein, called Rock and Rule. So I love those. Fritz the Cat. I guess that's Ralph Bakshi again. Mm-hmm. So those were the first secret peeks into cartoons that weren't meant for kids. Mm-hmm. And I would love it if Weapon Brown could be the heavy metal of its era. Mm. I'm just waiting. I would even love it if it was done in that style, like, you know, sort of dated dated animation, you know, with you know, bad lip syncing. I think it should be retro.
Okay. I don't know if you ever saw, there was a Peanuts cartoon that was running for a while on Boomerang at like 11 in the morning. And I watched it for a little while, and they had lots of little segments that there were, you could tell some of them were lifted right out of the Charles Schulz stuff. But I could always see these little sequences. There's a particular page I'm thinking of. This is the cover of Deep Fried Volume 1, Number 2. Mm-hmm. And it's got Weapon Brown, and he's outside the psychiatric help booth. And he's clearly, it says on the bottom, let's just say, the doctor is out. Uh-huh. And that's all we really need to know. And he is called Weapon Brown, so let's just say that he's the doctor's going to be out for quite a while.
It's only a smoking gun. Yeah, for those of you who can't read between the lines, the doctor is definitely out.
Out, yes. He's out for probably a long time to come. So those kinds of things, I honestly, when I see that kind of stuff, I would love to see that in an animated. Oh, there's even a Garfield page. Mm-hmm. Where Garfield is trying to, is after Weapon Brown and stuff like that. That's a cover to Blockheads War Number 2, which is just so many great things on here. If you understand the content, I think you're going to get a whole lot of fun out of these things. I think this is just a wonderful, a well put together, you know, just if you love these things and you don't mind them being poked fun at occasionally, you're going to really get a big laugh out of this tremendous book.
Well, I think I want people to know that and thank you for that. This is very well researched, as well researched as I could make it. So that you know, it's not just a few gags with characters you're most familiar with, like Garfield, Charlie Brown, Calvin Hobbs. You know, I dug deep, and especially for specific references, when I needed, for instance, to show a machinist's shop. I needed it to be decorated with famous mechanical objects and robots from comic history, because the whole point is to not have anything iconic in there that isn't taken from a comic strip. So, you know, I had to research I'm going to forget at this point. I'm going to forget some of the names of the characters I came up with, but you know, like 1920s and 30s era strips that had, like, you know, someone's famous mechanical man. So I made sure to put him in there as a robot, and Bleaker the rechargeable dog, and Robot Man, and so, and that's just one page. So every page, if you're really a fan, excuse me, if you're really a fan of comic strips and their history and their lore, I did everything I could to make every page as rich with references that I could. And these are going to be things that, like, you know, 9 people out of 10 aren't going to get these. But, you know, if you like comics and you're going to read this, say, oh, that's from Pogo, and that's from Crazy Cat, and that's from The Little King, and that's from some strip that no one's thought of in half a century.
That must have been fun for you, though. I mean, to be able to do all that kind of research and look into something like this.
It was exhausting. And then when you come across just the right thing that you're looking for, you're like, hey, it was all worth it. There's that. It's like panning for gold. You know, you're looking for, you know, you're looking you know, that just that perfect thing to decorate one panel on one page, and you know, half the time I'm like, God, you know, can't I just fake it? And then there's my conscience clicks in and says, no, you must continue digging through you know, the comics, you know, obscure websites, you know, the comic lovers collective and stuff like that. Keep digging until you find that reference. Well, it's there.
It's really great. It's such a great thing, particularly if you are a fan, like you're saying, of the strips and of these characters and stuff like that. You're really going to enjoy a very different take on it than you probably have ever seen before. So I always like that kind of thing. I like something that takes me where I haven't been before. And your book and your stories do that quite a lot to me. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a tremendous amount of fun.
Well, that's great. Well, I did it for you.
Now, I got a question for you. Of course, now, Kickstarter's over. Those people who participated are going to get their stuff. What about people who did
I spend the money on Coke. You know, you never know. It's a Kickstarter.
That's true. That's always a possibility. Now, as far as people who did not participate in the Kickstarter, how do they get a hold of Weapon Brown?
They don't. You either participate in my Kickstarters or you hit the road, pal. That's the way I've always lived my life, and I ain't ashamed to say it. No, it'll of course be for sale on my website. The store site for Weapon Brown is weaponbrown.com, which is off of my main site, which is whatisdeepfried.com. But it'll be available in amazon.com. Do I even need to say the .com at this point? I'm going to see if I can get it back into comic shops as well. Okay. Hopefully it'll come out in shops maybe a couple months before Weapon Brown Aftershock comes out. So people will see the first one, maybe be reintroduced to it, and then they can get excited for the new product as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about – you're talking about getting in the comic shops. Is that going to be through Diamond, or are you going to –
Yes.
You are going to go through Diamond.
Well, that's the plan at least. Okay. I don't see any reason why Diamond couldn't resolicit it, and I will certainly offer it to them. But that's, you know, fine. At the end of the day, that's their choice. But they've carried all my stuff before, so I don't see a reason why they wouldn't do it again.
So they're very likely to, if they've already carried this stuff once in the past, they're very likely to do it again. So that's good.
Yeah, I think the only reason I'm even pondering that they might not is simply because I've never offered a product, the same product twice, and I'm sure they do. You know, they resolicit, you know, Sandman and Watchmen and every other kind. So I'm as big as them. Why shouldn't they run me?
Now, one of the pages, it says, "The end is near, so grab your gear." You have T-shirts available for Weapon Brown, too. Do you get those basically?
Oh, you must be reading my digital version, right? My
yes.
PDF version.
Yes, that's what I'm looking at, yeah.
Ah, okay, yes.
And it says on there you've got your T-shirts and stuff available at the same weaponbrown.com. Do you sell those any other places, or is that pretty much the website exclusive?
Actually, it's funny. Now that I think of it, I'm pretty sure that this won't be as complicated as it sounds. So weaponbrown.com is its own domain, but I think I sell my T-shirts over in the whatisdeepfried.com store. But I don't think that's what you're asking. I think you're asking, are they in like Hot Topic or something?
Yeah.
The answer is no. The answer is you can only get them on my websites. Okay. So visit often.
Okay. So now, I've got to ask too, because with things going on, a successful Kickstarter, all these good things coming out, do you go to conventions pretty much?
Yeah, I'm planning to gear up again, because for a while I didn't really have any new products to sell. Mm-hmm. And I was out of Weapon Brown, so I couldn't even sell that. Mm. But I think I will be doing some conventions this year. And hopefully, since I've got several new products coming out after the Weapon Brown stuff, I'm looking forward to getting back into the swing of things. The real answer is I used to do them quite frequently, they're kind of exhausting to do, and without any new products to sell, I decided I could take a break from it. But I will be getting back into the swing of things soon. I've got a friend who really wants me to come back to Pittsburgh, so I don't want to let him down because he dresses up as my characters.
Oh, he does. Okay.
Yeah. The only one I know who dresses up is Beepo the Clown.
Oh, wow. Okay, so do you know which the next one you're going to go to? I guess sounds like Pittsburgh is going to be the one you're going to want to go to next.
Might be Pittsburgh. The real fact is that I haven't made any plans. There's some local shows here in Rochester, New York, and in Buffalo that I'll probably be doing.
Okay.
I need to get my head in the game and start picking out shows, because I've been mostly focused on the schedule for actually putting out the comics. But you want to recommend one for me? Where should I go?
Well, since it's not too far from where you are, I would say New York Comic Con would be a good choice.
Oh, yeah. You know what? That's kind of tricky, because they don't just let you buy a table. It's not first come, first serve. Mm-hmm. They really want you to they want you to be a name, and then if you're not a big name that they know, they maybe put you in a lottery. I remember the last couple times I tried to get in, it was like a real hassle, which I find to be obnoxious, quite frankly. I think it not just because it limits me, but I mean it limits anyone. It's as far as I'm concerned, if you're going to have a Comic-Con, let people buy tables and let them sell.
Mm-hmm.
But that's maybe it's a reflection on just how how high-profile comics have become, that they feel that they can, you know, basically discriminate against people who are not in the A tier of creators. But I'll try, because yeah, that's a show I've done in the past. I think I did the first year, actually. I was at a table with some other people. So yeah, I'd like to get back down there. We'll see what their policy is. And if I'm, you know, I don't know how many sales I have to make before they consider me worthy of, you know, just worthy of the privilege of plunking down $500 for a table. But
Well, I'll tell you two quick things. Is that number one is that they have a new policy that started up this past year, and that they sold very few 4-day tickets. They sold more individual days. Like, say, you could only go on Thursday. You could only go on Friday. And I got to interview Neil Adams for my podcast before. And I said to him, I said, what was the thing that you were so excited about this time? He said, this new policy, because when somebody came in, if they came in on Thursday, they were likely only there to be that day. And so they had to buy what they wanted that day. They couldn't wait till Sunday to decide if they're going to buy something. Right. So he made a lot of sales each day because they were very different.
Yeah.
So, and I also think that they've also developed all these different sections. There's like an indie section now and kind of stuff like that. So I think the chances, although they were doing a lot of construction last year, so that might limit what they can do this year. But anyway, San Diego and New York are kind of in competition for which one's the biggest and the best.
Yeah. And, you know, that's I did San Diego once. I mean, it was just fine. I guess I'm a little put off by just how overwhelming those shows are, because they're less comic book shows and more broad spectrum entertainment shows, and you know, which is fine, but it's you know, I'm not offended by it, but at the same time, it's like, well, you know, San Diego, that's a huge schlep, and you're in competition with thousands of people, and you know, I guess I don't find the massiveness of it something that I necessarily need to rush to more than once in my life. But, you know, I could see myself going back there or New York at some point. New York is easier because I'm right around the corner.
I would highly recommend you don't go to Dragon Con if that's the case.
I've done Dragon Con a few times and done well. And I like Dragon Con because it's a little offbeat. It's, you know, it's a cosplay con. It's spread out amongst multiple hotels. I always thought that was nifty, but I haven't done that in a few years either. Yeah, it's time to you know, polish the rust or whatever. Insert metaphor here. kick the tires off my rust or something.
Okay, something like that. Yeah. So two more things, real quickly. If people want to keep up with what you're doing, what social media should they follow, if any?
They should follow them all, and I'm sure I'll be on one or more of them. So, well, if they want to follow me, I post strips weekly at whatisdeepfried.com. That's my main site. On social media, you can find me at – let me see if I can remember the names here. On Twitter, it's – you can look for my name, Jason Youngbluth, Youngbluth. Or you can look for my handle, which is I am Death Ray. You can go to Instagram, and I am at death_ray_graphics, or just look for my name. And I'm at Jason Youngbluth on Facebook.
Okay. And the last question, you were talking about Aftershock. And of course, with all the Kickstarter things that you've got going, do you have a general idea as to when that Aftershock series is going to start?
Well, Aftershock will just be one issue. At least that's the anticipation. Yeah. And I'm shooting to get that out before the end of the year.
Oh, wow. Okay. You're a hardworking guy. You get all this stuff done. You're going to get all the Kickstarter stuff and then also get another book out? Wow.
Yeah. It's and that's not even the only other book that I want to do this year. So I'm keeping busy. If I can plug one of my other projects,
sure.
The next comic book I'll probably have in stores, this will be before Aftershock, I assume, is the second issue of my comic anthology Peak. And I did one before, and it's been a while since I promised I would do the next one, but I'm doing it now. It's going to be it's a humor anthology, and it's stories all written by me, but this time around I'm planning on having multiple different artists illustrate my stories, and it's basically going to be making fun of the 80s.
Okay. I can always expect I am not going to know what in the world you're going to do when I buy your stuff, so that's always a good thing.
Well, the, you definitely won't get this because the whole premise is I'm going to do 80s references that are so obscure that no one's ever going to get them.
Okay. Well, Jason, you're doing great things. I think it's wonderfully funny and very – it makes you think and laugh at the same time, which is something I really like about your stuff. And I'm looking forward to more Weapon Brown as it moves forward. And congrats on the successful Kickstarter, boy. I wish I could say that more often to people. So I'm really happy for you, and I can't wait to see what you're going to do next.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to speak and to let more people know about this. Thank you for your kind sentiments. And, you know, whenever I do a Kickstarter or whenever it funds, it really fills me with a lot of energy and a lot of excitement about getting those products out and justifying the people's enthusiasm for me. So it's the feeling's mutual.
Well, keep it up.
I will. Thank you.
At least nothing slimy and repulsive is coming out of its mouth. Rats.
That's it for this episode. Be back next week for episode 325, which will be something special, so you won't want to miss it. But until then, keep reading your comics.